Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
Welcome and happy Easter, and happy Easter holidays to those celebrating and enjoying across the planet. This is the Keys and Gray podcast with me, Richard Keys, and...
me, Andy Gray.
Still at a distance, still at 3,500 miles distance, recovering from replacement knee surgery. And before we go any further, the update, Andy, is what?
All good, Richard. Progressing slowly but surely. And I am scheduled to be back in Doha on Saturday late afternoon to resume my duties as I've been very fortunate to be your guest on your wonderful shows that you present on BN Sports on a regular basis.
The reason Andy says that is because he goes into lockdown as soon as he gets back. And congratulations, my friend, on the pronunciation of scheduled correctly. The Americans say scheduled. It's a mistake that's repeated by many and often.
Well, I always thought CH was anyway.
Well, it's like lieutenant and lieutenant. Lieutenant is very English. Lieutenant is very American. Very much so, yes. Anyway, we had an unbelievable reaction to our podcast last week with Paul Stewart. Paul, of course, the former Manchester City, Tottenham, Liverpool and England striker, and he spoke honestly and movingly about the abuse he suffered over many years as a teenage boy trying to make it in the game. He spoke also, of course, about his fellow survivors. Now, if you haven't listened to the podcast, please do. I'll say it again. Yeah. It is a tough listen, but it's something that we need to confront. If you're affected by the topics being discussed in that podcast, you can get help. People will listen. There is a dedicated helpline set up to listen to you, believe you. That's important. Believe you and subsequently help you. And the number is 0800 023 2642. 0800 023 2642. And Paul, if you're listening, we will be in touch anyway. But just so that you know, the reaction we've had is nothing but supportive. A whole lot of admiration for your bravery and those of other survivors who have spoken out. And football now needs to listen, and we will, for two, be watching. We cannot let this go. I'll come back to this in a moment, Andy. There should be a statue erected for the survivors, okay? And I'll explain my thinking on that in just a moment. Anyway, as ever, a big welcome to our new listeners from across the world. Thank you for spending your time with us. Do subscribe, please, on whatever platform you get your podcasts on. And you can follow us on Twitter and Insta at Keys and Gray Pod, A-N-D, Keys and Gray Pod. And it's always great to hear from you. We didn't last week have a quiz. This week we can, Andy. Where in the world am I? I have a
go on.
CN Tower, an iconic revolving restaurant. Uh-huh. One of my landmarks is Casa Loma and Gothic Mansion, now a museum. You'll find St. Lawrence's Market here. I am the capital of my province. My my province is Ontario.
CN Tower, I was going to say CN Tower, yes, in Canada, yeah.
Yes, and a very big welcome to all our new listeners in Toronto, Canada. It is lovely to have you with us. Yeah. So
I've been up that, I think, as well.
Have you? Well, your brother lives in Canada, doesn't he?
Yeah, we toured Canada when I played for Scotland, actually, Keezy, once. We went and played in Vancouver. I'm sure it was Vancouver, Edmonton, where my brother was living. So that was a real boost for him to watch his brother play for his country in his backyard when he's living in Edmonton. And I'm sure we played our last game in Toronto. I'm convinced we played three games against Canada. Back to back to back. It was a great little trip from the west to the east coast of Canada. Really interesting.
Is that the picture I've seen many times with you and Ruff and Big Eck all together?
No, that's at that's in Jerusalem at the Wailing Wall.
Ah, okay.
That one. So that's in Jerusalem.
I know. I've seen that picture many, many times.
I know. Willie Miller's in it as well, I think. Willie's in it.
Yes,
that
yes, that's true. That's true. Mm. Okay, now, here's my thinking.
Go on.
Statues are for heroes. They are for people that have shown bravery. And there are many of them. And there have been many erected.
Yeah.
And Manchester City. And we obviously, I know that what we're going to be doing this week, but let me share that. We'll be talking with David Platt shortly about Sergio Aguero. Manchester City are going to erect a statue for Aguero. I fervently believe, Andy, and I've run this past a number of people this week, and Paul Stewart being one of them, that there should be a statue, a permanent reminder of what football got wrong, of what football did not do. 332 clubs involved, 849 survivors, and those are the people that we know about.
Yes.
I honestly believe that there should be a statue, and I think this should be the case that it's discussed and ultimately erected at Wembley. Imagine if just one 13-year-old being abused in the same fashion, because it hasn't gone away, Andy. It won't go away. It'll always be there. It won't be as bad as it was, but long-term, these problems tend to exist, and more so if we don't confront them, if we don't highlight them, if we don't shine a light on them. There should be a statue to the survivors. To those people. Andy Woodward, how much more brave can you be? Paul Stewart,
first
high-profile individual to step forward and say, by the way, that happened to me. Ultimately, David White, who knows he should have come forward 20 years before he did, but it was hard. He couldn't, and we heard why. But there should be something, and I don't know what it should be. I'm not, you know, of an artistic bent, so
no.
I just believe there should be something
It could be a wall, Richard, with a roll, with a scroll of these brave people who have stepped forward out of the shadows into the light. It could be recognizing with their names on like a memorial, not memorial, but on a wall that says, "We will not forget you. We don't understand how you've managed to survive this, but you have. And here is a permanent marker of the recognition of what you went through." I don't know, but it's a great idea.
Well, I ran it past Paul, who, as you would expect, was initially embarrassed perhaps not. But then I think he thought more about the people that haven't been able to step into the spotlight like him. Mm-hmm. And it has got his support, Andy, and I think it is something that we should endorse, and I think it is something that we should 100%. Chase. I've spoken to a couple of boys on the Nationals this week and said, look, can we get you interested? I cannot think of one good reason why the Football Association, whose chief exec this past fortnight has apologised to everybody on behalf of the Football Association that didn't listen. In fact, like Charles Hughes, they turned their back and walked away.
Yeah.
If there is a genuine feeling that people have got something to answer for, then make it permanent, that apology, and give us something that others that might have to confront the same problem can turn to and say, yes, you know what, I can speak, and that's the most for me the most important thing.
Great idea, right behind it.
I did promise this week, when in discussions with our gaffer Andy that produces this, that I would tell him the story of how Bobby Moore's statue got to Wembley. I told you once for the Keys and Grey audience on Be In Sports, but it is an extraordinary story, and it is an example of how things can get done dependent upon who you know and what.
Correct.
Actually, not so much what you know, but as I say, the former. A friend of mine, Danny Desmond, you know him, owns a property company called Bridehall. Got to know Bobby Moore very well during the last few years of Bob's life. Danny had, in the years when Nick Faldo didn't wear a cap and wasn't sponsored, the name of Danny's company, Bridehall, was on the bag. It was the only name. If you look back at those pictures, you'll see it. Anyway, Danny's playing golf at Wentworth, and Bob's there. And Danny fell in love with the guy. And I mean, having spoken to Jeff Powell recently, as we did, was easy to do so. I never understood why there wasn't a statue to mark the achievements of someone who should have been knighted, as it happens. But
yeah,
Bobby,
me too.
Bobby
I agree
Moore.
With you 100%. I mean, I'm flabbergasted to this day.
It's incredible.
The lack of recognition for your World Cup winning captain. It staggers me beyond belief.
Unbelievable. Anyway, Danny and I used to talk about this a lot. And also part of that group was a guy called Peter Mead, who at one time owned Millwall and was a partner in the advertising company Abbott Mead Vickers in the city. So Peter knew very well what it was we were looking to achieve. I'm sitting one night at Seven Dials in London, which is in Camden, waiting to go and see Brian Richardson, the then chairman of Coventry, in the Covent Garden Hotel. And Peter had been appointed to the board of New Wembley. And all of these things just sometimes all come together in your head at the same time. And I thought, wow, I know what we can do. We can ask Peter to see if he can suggest that we should have a statue of Bobby Moore at New Wembley. And I rang Danny and said, what do you think? Yes, rang Peter, leave it with me. And weeks and months passed and nothing happened. And I picked the Daily Mirror up and there's this poll. Who should we have a statue to? Nigel Bucock or a rugby league try score? And there were all sorts of examples. And I thought, what the hell's this? So I rang me and I said, what are you doing? I thought we'd agreed. And he went, no, we have to go through the procedure. So they'd run this poll. And he said to me, relax, we know who's going to win it.
Well, we know who's going to win it. Bobby's going to win it by miles.
That's right. And Bobby did win it by miles. And we later, Stephanie picked up and ran with it. And yeah, it was commissioned. And it stands there very proudly. And I'm absolutely chuffed to bits that we did it. So there's an example to all of you who think, no, you won't. You can't do that. Yes, because I think it was Obama, was it not, that said, yes, we can. Yes, Andy, we can. Mm-hmm. And we've got to. We really have got to, because it can't be forgotten.
No, that's true. 100% can't be forgotten. Cannot be.
By the way, why didn't people jump all over Sterling's dive?
It was soft, to say the least. There was a little bit of contact, and it would have been an interesting one had VAR been in operation to see if anything would happen. I tend to think that nothing would have happened. There would a penalty would have been given. I thought at the time the guy going to ground was asking for trouble. No need to. And I thought he gave Raheem the opportunity. There was a little bit of contact. And like most front men, if they feel that little bit of contact, particularly in the penalty area, they're going to make the referee make a decision. That's what he did. So nothing wrong with it for me. That happens. That's what we've got. And it was another good. It's been a good week for England. Good week, but I think in a week where results have been better than performances for me, and maybe I'll get shot down for that, but I don't care. I thought England were okay, but far from the finished article for me. Far from it.
I beg to differ. I think he's down, certainly heading down with the accompanying scream before if there's any contact. I don't believe there was. I think it's sadly the world we now live in that
soft,
can happen.
Soft is
no, not soft, Andy. It's cheating. It's cheating. It is. Here's an interesting one. Premier League clubs fear their concerns about VAR may be overlooked after it emerged that responses to a recent survey were not sent directly to the governing body. Answers from clubs about VAR were initially sent to a polling firm, Ipsos Mori, not straight to the Premier League's business development team. Not known if the answers were then sent to the Premier League in full and exactly as written. I mean, honestly.
What the hell's the point of doing it for? What's the point of asking people?
You could not make it up.
Send it to the relevant authorities. It's a joke. I think they're just worried about the hammering it's going to take.
Well, and so it should. And it won't get any better until Mike Riley is replaced.
Yeah.
Agents, would you believe, walked away with $272 million.
I thought there was a pandemic on.
20 Premier League clubs.
For money. I thought football was really on its knees.
Agents, Andy.
And yet we're paying a quarter of £1 billion to agents still.
£35 million spent by Chelsea. £30 million by Manchester United. Another 7 Premier League clubs paid out more than £10 million. Led by Liverpool, who paid 21. The others were Arsenal, Everton, Leicester, Newcastle, which might surprise a few, Spurs, and Wolves. West Brom spent the lowest, $4 million. Why do agents get paid to move players along between clubs? Why?
I don't know. I've never known that. I've never known that ever. But, I mean, it's a modern phenomenon that's happened. It's something that started, and we've allowed to get a grip in the game. And it's almost as if clubs now can't buy a player, Richard, without going to an agent first. I mean, if I'm Manchester United, I'm the best team in the country, Man City or Liverpool, and I want to buy you, and you're playing for Newcastle, why can't Liverpool pick up the phone Newcastle and say, we're prepared to give you £50 million for Richard Keys, knowing that you'll get him. Is it a deal or is it not a deal? Why does that not happen now?
I can't answer the question. I don't know how difficult it must be for Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool to persuade players to sign for them. I just don't get it. The latest will be Jack Grealish. Villa have said they'll put a price on him, and we know will sell in the summer. What price would you say he's worth?
Oh, wow. I mean, are we taking pandemic into the situation, into the equation, or what do you think he'd go for?
No, because I think half a dozen proper ones will probably still go for what they would have been worth. So
right.
I think
Jack might go for it between 80 and 100.
I agree.
There you go.
I think the high end of that.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah,
I just think he's worth it. And I've said to you before, I've been a huge fan for a long time. I've always said to you, it would make any team. And the top six better. And a lot of people have gone, well, you mean. And here's an example. Manchester City, the best team in the country, are looking to get them on their books. Then that must tell you something. If Guardiola thinks that he might make this team, who are going to be champions again this year, better, then that tells you that he is highly thought of in the footballing world, hugely. I mean, I do feel for him this week. One or two I feel for him, Madison, who have missed out. And what would have been a good week for them to be with the England squad. So we shall see, but a good player is never forgotten. And I think that England would be foolish to sort of discard Jack and James Maddison just because they never made it because of their injuries. But that's football. England think they're rock solid in that department, that they have an abundance of talent, and they do. But as Arsene Wenger told you and I, what did he think? What age did he feel that you should pick your best player? What age was it, Richard, again?
Around about Jack's.
There you go.
Yeah, around
and
about
Jack's. And that's what I'm thinking. A lot of players like the ones they're putting pressure on, like Mason Mount and like Phil Foden, who they're saying are going to be the two that are going to be there. They're young boys still. They're young boys, and at this level in this company, it's going to be really difficult for them. But Grealish at 25 is right where he should be and right at the right age. So it'll be an interesting one for Gareth Southgate going on. To see who eventually ends up picking.
We record on a day when Erling Haaland's dad is apparently speaking with Barcelona, but this also fascinated me when I read it today. Lionel Messi's move to Manchester City is now case closed. It's off. It was never on.
I was going to say it was never on, was it?
It was never, ever on. I mean, Guardiola and Messi will never, ever work together again at any point, anywhere. At any time?
No.
When you've been forced out of a club, as Guardiola was, by the player, I can't think you're rushing to sign him anywhere else, are you?
And I've said to you before, though, yes, still got talent, still got quality. But is he going to be the missing link between them winning the Champions League and not? I don't think so. Not at 33, 34 years of age. Still a great talent. But, you know, Juventus thought that when they bought Ronaldo, that he would be the one, he would be the catalyst. He would take them to the holy grail of the Champions League final and subsequently win it. And he hasn't, you know, and that's the fact. So apart from selling shirts, Richard, and things like that, I see no reason why Manchester City would want to sign Lionel Messi at the age he's at now.
I read from Martin Samuel again. Almost certainly, there were those at the Football Association of Ireland who saw Mick McCarthy as a dinosaur. It's an insult that's often tossed his way. An old-fashioned coach playing old-fashioned football. Yet in McCarthy's 10 games as Ireland manager, his team lost once and won five.
Yeah.
Okay? What would they give for that kind of record now as Stephen Kenny toils still looking for his first win after 11 games in charge? But apparently, Andy, he plays football the right way, Kenny.
It's a quote that comes out often, the right way. And the thing is, I keep saying, there is no right way. There's whatever way you like as a coach. That's the right way. The one you like, the one you want to play. And yes, if you have players who want to pass the ball around, fine, that's the way you want to play it. But it's not right, it's not wrong. It just happens to be what you prefer. Mm. And long may it continue that we have various ways of playing this game, because as soon as we get down to the same teams that play the same way, week after week, game after game, and they all try and do the same things, I just think the game will be poorer for it. Mm. So keep the diversity in football. Keep it like that. Show us teams that don't want to play it across the back 35 times before they get it forward. You know, let teams who play forward quickly, let them play and let them show that they can win football matches and games, because that's what makes it. The differences make it.
Here we go. We'll introduce our guest in just a moment. Sergio Aguero joined Manchester City from Atletico Madrid in 2011 for $35 million. What would he be worth today if he was joining at the same age and at the same stage of his career?
Top end, biggest 180. Who's the top transfer? What is it, Mbappe?
Yeah.
Neymar, something like that. He'd be up there with them.
I think so.
Yeah, up there with them.
In the 10 years, he turned into the club's leading all-time goal scorer. He's the fourth highest scorer in Premier League history, behind only Shearer, Rooney and Cole. Won four Premier League titles. Think about that, four.
Yeah.
He was the catalyst, obviously, that got them over the line first time around. One FA Cup, five League Cups. The catalyst I talk about was the 94th minute goal against QPR to take the title in 2012. And as we've mentioned already, the club are saying they're going to honour him with a statue outside the Etihad. Do you think, and we'll talk with David Platt in a moment, who was there when they signed him, do you think he'll stay in English football?
Wow. Wow, what a shout. I don't know. Would he stay in English football? Okay, they've decided, City, that he can go. They've obviously had conversations with him. And whether they've tried to persuade him to have another season, I don't know. It doesn't look like it. But I cannot believe that he would leave. I don't know. Would he leave to stay in England? Or would he leave to go back home?
Would you leave to sign for, say, Manchester United or Arsenal? Chelsea?
You might. He obviously loves the league. He's loved Premier League football. He's been a massive success. Who needs a centre forward?
Manchester
Chelsea.
United.
Chelsea. And Manchester Chelsea. United, probably a number
Arsenal.
Nine like him.
Yeah.
No, Arsenal would, I mean, Arsenal too far away from me to him. He needs to get a team that he thinks is going to be up there at the sharp end next season, because he hasn't got two seasons to see if a team develops in the way that maybe Mikel Arteta will want it, and maybe the time it might take them. He doesn't have that time at the age Sergio's at. He needs to get to a team that's down the line further or down the road further, and United and Chelsea, in my opinion, are. And definitely, I mean, would be better teams for a fit. And this is what I say. I don't know what his injuries are like. He's missed too many games this season for my liking. But a fit Aguero, would he make United right now better?
Yeah. Yes.
Would he make Chelsea better? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, I don't know. But he may feel that he wants to go home. I don't know. and they might want to go and play in Argentina for a while. That's, you know, a lot of the guys do. I noticed Cavani's talking about that. He might not renew his contract at United because he wants to go back to Argentina and play there for a couple of years. It's often a lure that's strong for the Argentine players. So we'll see, but certainly the league will be poorer without Sergio, that's for certain. Mm.
Well, let's introduce our guest. Was assistant manager, of course, at Manchester City that extraordinary day when Aguero won it, or should we say Aguero?
Yeah.
What was it? Marty said, drink it in. You will never see anything else like it. That's right. So often Martin was absolutely spot on. Platy and Roberto Mancini, of course, touchline, the boys that put the foundation stones in place.
It is decision day for Manchester City and for Queen's Park Rangers to Torre. Zabaleta! Where's it going to drop? It's in! The goal is given, and it's Zabaleta! And suddenly the mood changes from desperation to delight for Manchester City. As it stands, they're going to win the title. Manchester City towards heartbreak on the final day of the season. They win the title from here. Could it happen? They're racing back to the research at Sunderland. Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero! Typical City, we've been saying, the team that builds you up to let you down. This is the team that comes back and finds a way to win.
Mr. Platt, let's get this formal and correct. How are
Mr.
we?
Mr. Platt.
Yeah.
It's Platy. Platy, how are you, Philip?
Thanks for that. I actually thought I might be getting arrested then when you said that. But anyhow. I'm good. I'm very good, actually. Yeah, not too bad at all. You boys?
Well, you sound buoyant, David. We don't hear much from you these days.
No.
Why have you taken cover?
I think it started a little while ago. I just pulled away from media, pulled away from everything, and started to quite enjoy the anonymity that I was getting. And as people requested things from me. And I was turning them down. Whenever another request came in, it was very much if I do that, then they're going to be upset. So I suspect that this interview now and this podcast is going to cause me all sorts of mire with about 20 phone calls tomorrow of the people that I've just turned down in the last 3 months.
All sorts of mither. That tells me that you have become a proper Mancunian.
It's where I live.
Well, not quite. You live in South Manchester, which I think is a very lovely part of the world, is it not?
The leafy suburbs of, yes. Mm. Not too bad at all. It's very nice, actually. Very good, yeah.
It's not quite Manchester, though, Platy, is it? It's South Manchester.
It's the leafy suburbs of Manchester, yes. With blue skies this evening, which is very nice. Yeah.
Most unusual club. Well, it may be in some ways, Platy, that's fitting. Now, listen, we want the story. Whose idea was Sergio Aguero?
Okay, I've been thinking about this because obviously we primed that this was going to happen. You've not just phoned me up as I'm watching Mistake Cook. we might catch him. So I've been thinking about it. We went to it'd been on Mancini's radar. He'd always been on his radar, and we went to Los Angeles pre-season. We were staying in the hotel. We were doing our pre-season training in Los Angeles with North American tour for Manchester City, and I can remember a conversation going on between the chairman of the club, who had a house in Los Angeles, and actually saying that he was going around for dinner that night with Jesus Gil, who was the Atletico Madrid president. Mm-hmm. Mm. And he was going to do the deal, but it was going to be done over a nice meal and everything. And Jesus Gill was a very, very good negotiator, and I thought it was going to cost a lot of money. And was Mancini basically insistent, and was this the player that he wanted? To which Robbie said, yeah, of course, we need him and things. And then in breakfast the following day, Caldoun came back to us and said, right, the deal's done at 38 million euros. We're talking 38 million euros, 2011, would it have been?
Yes.
So you gross that up to what's happened in the modern game in the last 10 years or so. And we're talking a couple of hundred mil or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Easy.
So this was, right, okay, fair enough, great, no problem. We're getting Sergio Aguero. We did our pre-season tour of Los Angeles. He never turned up there. And then he was due to turn up in Manchester, and he came along to training. And we're watching training, and he, to be honest with you, for the first 2 weeks, he didn't really run that much. He didn't look that quick. He couldn't have hit a cow's backside with a banjo. And I remember sidling up. I sort of distanced myself away from Robbie a little bit and went to the first team coach and said, this guy's going to get us the sack. Because, and I'm serious, honestly, because it was like, and I'm just thinking to myself, oh my God, his first game in the squad was the Charity Shield, the Community Shield game against Man United. United had won the league. We'd won the, I think we'd come second, but they'd won the double or something. So the first game was the Charity Shield. We're 2-0 up at half time, gets back to 2-2. No extra time, obviously. Managers have said the preseason friendlies of Community Shield, no extra time. Straight to penalties. I turn around to Robbie with about a minute and a half to go of injury time and say, why don't we get Aguero on? Good idea, ask him. And I turn around, and in my Italian and his Argentinian stroke Spanish, I say to him, you're going to get warmed up and go on and get a penalty? Take a penalty? He doesn't say a word, but just shakes his head. And I'm thinking, not only can he not eat a cow's backside with a banjo, he can't take penalties either. And I sink into my chair. I just sank into my chair thinking, this is it. This is the end and what have you. If it goes further, we actually nanny breaks free. We get beat in the Community Shield. The following week, we make the opener. We play the opener against Swansea City, newly promoted Swansea City, Brendan Rodgers' team. We play the opener on a Friday night of the Premier League. And we're winning 1-0, and Brendan's team are keeping the ball and everything, and the result is no way a foregone conclusion. Yeah. And we're about 65, 66 minutes, something like that, in. And Robbie turns around to me and he said, like, get Aguero warmed up, he's going on. And I look at him as if he's insane, honestly. Are you serious? I mean, we may as well get a player sent off. We may as well put Balotelli on and then we can get him sent off. We're winning 1-0. What are we doing here? You know, he's not shown anything, honestly, seriously. So he said, no, he's going on. So I take my time with the set pieces, thinking, how can I stretch this out to keep him off this pitch and what have you? And in the end, 71 minutes, he goes onto the pitch. We're 1-0 up. It's a toss-up between the best 20 minutes I've ever seen in my life. Roberto Baggio for Juventus against Pescara when we were 5 up after 20 minutes and he'd scored 4 and made 1. Or wow. Aguero's 19 minutes when he came out. He scored 2, made 1. I still don't know how he made the goal for David Silva now. And you stood there, I'm watching on the bench thinking, what has Mancini got? Because everybody's hailing him now as this superstar selector of players and everything like that. And if they'd have come into the place 2 weeks ago, he'd have been sacked, honestly. It was, and from then on, I mean, then the rest is, I mean, they say it's history and everything, but he just went on then and just became this unbelievable player. And, I've spoken about him in glowing terms. One, he's a diamond of a lad, an absolute diamond of a lad. In fact, he's the one real player that I miss from Manchester City in terms of, you know, you leave and things like that and you miss him because he's a diamond of a guy. But I wouldn't put him in the class because of the statistics. You know, if you're talking about Ronaldo and Messi being in the penthouse suites of a high rise, I would say Aguero's got the second best view. I think
I wouldn't disagree with that.
You've got to talk about him in those things. He can in terms of a player that can shape a game and change a game on his own. I mean, I used to go to bed on a Friday night thinking, how can these defenders cope with that tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon?
And when you say the rest is history, the rest is legend, Platy. By the way, as an aside, you talk about Mancini choosing players. Nobody saw Yaya as a 10, but he did. He'd seen him play, I think, for Monaco. David Silva. So company was already there, but so many of the pieces that Guardiola subsequently worked with were already in place, and people tend to forget that. And I'm always of the view that, listen, we'll come back to it. I want to talk Aguero. I think had Mancini stayed, Manchester City would have won the Champions League by now, but that's just my opinion. I'll maybe see later what you think.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say anything whether we would or we wouldn't have done. But I think you're right. I think what Robbie did, and I think what a lot of people don't understand outside of football and everything, is that we went in, and one of the benefits of going into a club when I went in there in that summer, and it was literally, right, okay, well, we've earmarked 7 players and we got 6 of them. It was Yaya, David Silva, Jerome Boateng, Kolarov. What that does is immediately transform your dressing room.
Yeah, totally.
But what it immediately does as well is it puts 6 so-called superstars with the real ump, and you have to manage that dressing room, you know, with half a dozen players that are earning a great deal of money, that are clearly surplus to requirements and everything, and you've got to manage that dressing room as well. Now, his way of managing it was basically saying, you're not training with us, so disappear and what have you. It was more like, well, they're sulking now, Robbie. Well, yeah, you sort them out type thing. But that's another story. But yeah, it brings with it its own problems. That's what I'm saying, you know. But, I, again, you go in and, you know, Manchester City, they'd had all that money. They'd had all that, you know, the influx of the finance and everything, and they'd gone on. And I got ridiculed, I think, on Sky. I was working with you boys when I think you asked me, Richard, whether they could win the league this year when the money came in. I said, no, they won't do. And it was great living in Manchester there, because you turn away, you turn basically half the city against you immediately. But I just didn't think they could do, because I think they needed to build up to win in the league. You know, you can't just go out and buy players when you're not in the Champions League and expect them to come to you.
No, that's fair.
And I think, you know, what happened was, and you know, they built up to that period, but Robbie transformed it when he came in with the help of the money that came in and everything. But his identification of those players that came in transformed Manchester City.
Who was the one you missed, Platy?
One summer.
Who was the one you missed?
What do you mean, the one that we missed?
Yeah, the number 7.
Yeah, 6. You got 6 out of 7.
It's David Luiz, actually.
Was it really?
Yeah, Benfica, yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah. And again, the reason, I mean, it was another funny story, because there was no money left in the pot. Obviously, financial fair play was coming in. There was money left in the pot and everything, but it was all about what can you get in, what can you spend. And we're spending money left, right, and centre. We're not selling players because they're earning more money than God and we can't get them anywhere, so we can't sell anybody. And to be honest with you, we ran out of money. But that's, you know, it was quite funny, really, because Robbie was like, get me the players, with Gary Cook, the chief exec at the time and what have you. And Gary was explaining to me that it's like, the problem is he wants them that quick that we go in and everybody knows that they can have our trousers down on the negotiation. Yeah, so players that should have cost 20 were costing 25. And in the end, we never actually got David Luiz, because there was no money left in the pot, you know?
Yeah.
So... I don't think he's too kindly, Robbie, to me to say, well, you may as well buy it. You're earning enough. You've earned enough in your life. You buy it.
You see, that moment you talk about, Platy, I spent 2 years in Manchester and I got to know that club fairly well. During the time that we worked at Sky Better, and for me, they were always the nearly club. Fran Ely always said, if there was a club that would win cups for cock-ups, it's Manchester City. They were always, yeah. I mean, even when they won the title in 68, United won the European Cup.
Tried
they were always
we
in the shadow.
We tried hard in 2012 to cock it up.
Well, you did. But the point is, that moment, for me, was the biggest, arguably the biggest in any club's history, because it changed everything. It changed the mentality. It changed the belief. And all of a sudden, Manchester City weren't coming second. They were going to come first. That's what I think City fans owe Aguero. Do you agree?
I would say they owe Aguero by that, and by default, owe Mancini as well. And I think they do.
Yes,
I know, in all fairness to the Manchester City fans, I think they do. You know, they remember Robbie very, very fondly and things like that, you know. And in many ways, you know, and not to, I don't want to go off it too long because we are talking Aguero and things like that, but it actually happened at Old Trafford, I think. The change happened at Old Trafford. If you remember the Rooney overhead kick when they beat us 2-1?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant goal.
We went in at half-time in that game. We were 1-1 at half-time, and they'd given us a right good hiding at Old Trafford, if I'm honest. We were 1-1 at half-time, and he went in, Robbie, and he tore a strip off him. But he tore a strip off him in the manner of saying, you're frightened. Yeah. Now, you shouldn't be frightened. And we actually went out second half. We actually went toe-to-toe with Man United and were better than them in the second half. And Rooney scores the wonder goal, the overhead kick. We get beat 2-1, but the boys came in the dressing room after the game. And it was a real pivotal moment because they realised that the best team in the country weren't as good as them. And it was a real pivotal moment. We'd been beaten at Old Trafford, but it was a real pivotal moment because they'd gone out for 45 minutes and gone, no, we'll go toe-to-toe with you and we're better than you.
Yeah.
And I think it was then, and from then, that's when I think they went on and we started to win games, et cetera, win the big games. But you know, one of Robbie's mantras was always, it's not the big games you need to win, it's the little games. You know, you can get motivated for the big games, but it's the little games, you know, it's the Everton's. I don't know whether anybody played against Everton and things, but I played for Everton in their lives. Sorry, Andy, sorry.
Sorry.
Andy, what was it? Do you remember what Joey Barton said to us about that last game of the season as he got sent off?
Yeah, get somebody else sent off. What was he trying to send off?
Obviously, he was trying to get Aguero sent off as well, but he also said, Platy, that you'd gone. He felt Manchester City...
I'd gone.
Not you, they. They.
You had gone as well.
You had gone as a collective.
Right. I'd gone. I was completely gone, yeah.
And the team?
You know what? The strange thing was about that. I mean, I remember we... 6 games to go, we'd gone 8 points adrift. We'd got beaten at Arsenal. Mario had been sent off. They'd won. They'd gone 8 points clear of us with 6 games left. The following Wednesday, they were at Wigan. We played West Brom at home. We beat West Brom at home. They got beat by Wigan. And I remember the boys in the dressing room after the game. And we were watching the last 2 minutes at Wigan United. We're getting beat 1-0. And we were lost in the, watching the, all crammed round the laptop and watching the game. And they got beat 1-0. And again, there was this shift. Although it was still 5 points, there was this shift. We classed it as 2 points because we had them to play at the Etihad. So we thought, right, okay, it's 2 points. So we're now talking, we win all our games. There's one draw that's got to happen. And it happened. They kicked off early, the Old Trafford against Everton. Winning 4-2, about 5 minutes left, finished up 4-4.
Yeah,
we
remember that.
Yes,
remember that.
Yes, absolutely.
We beat Wolves 2-0. Another small club that certain players played for. And
he's battered you, Andrew.
I let you off because
the good thing is, Andy, because I'm about I don't know how many thousand miles away. I can say things like that without any fear.
No, you're not. Blatty, you're about 100 miles away. No. He's sat in the West Midlands at the minute. Knee replacement surgery.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, no, we beat a magnificent side in Wolves that day. And United drew against a magnificent side in Everton. And... You know what? Basically, we actually thought that that's it now. We've won it because we had a much much better goal difference than them. We played them on the Monday night, beat them on the Monday night, and went top of the league. And I remember being really really worried going to St James's Park. The euphoria of beating Man United and thinking it was all done. We think we've won it. We didn't actually play that bad against QPR. We played well against QPR. My real concern was if they sit back, which they were going to do, because to be honest with you, I think they needed a point to stay up or something for definite, and Bolton needed to get beat at Stoke. And I just thought to myself, I wonder if we can break them down. You know, can we break them down? And Zabaleta scored with about 5 minutes to go or 10 minutes to go before half time. And I thought, that's it. And he came out in the second half, and it was just the whole second half was strange. It's not just what Aguero did. The whole second half was strange because QPR didn't particularly play well to score the goals. We didn't particularly play badly to concede the goals. There were just individual mistakes. And before you know it, and the Joey Barton sending off and everything, it was just moving from one place to the other. You know what I mean? We went 1-1, you don't worry about it. We go 2-1 down, you're now starting to worry because we need two goals. Joey gets sent off. Immediately you're thinking, right, they're down to 10 men, that's fine. But down to 10 men, they just sit back even further. And it's like, oh my God. And I can remember looking up at the clock with 4 minutes to go, 2-1 down, when it hit 90 minutes and the fourth official put 4 minutes up, and Robbie was out on the in the technical area, not saying anything, literally just stood there putting his hands through his hair, his lovely flowing locks.
Yes, it's very lovely hair he's always had. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Always. I could tell you a story about that in a minute. But anyhow, he's rubbing his hair through his lovely flowing locks. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, what do I do here? Because there's no point in me going out there to impart my words of wisdom with 4 minutes to go of a title-winning game at home against QPR when you've set yourself up and everything. What words of wisdom am I actually going to say? But I thought,
yeah,
when the full-time whistle's 30 seconds off, I can't leave him on his own there. I've got to be with him on his own. You know, and Dzeko scores, and we jump up, and then you sit down and you think, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything, you know?
yeah.
And then when Aguero scores, I mean, I've had mates before, I just took off down the touchline and whatever. I had a mate ring me up and said, did somebody drop a burger or something like that? And that you're running for anything. you know, and it was like literally bedlam. And the interesting thing about that game is QPR kicked off. The result had come through from Stoke that Bolton had got relegated. They hadn't. They kicked the ball in the far corner. Joe Hart went to get the ball. Nothing. Unless they go and press that ball, Joe Hart's not giving it on back. And QPR just couldn't be bothered. The players just couldn't be bothered going catching the play. There was actually about 70 seconds left on the clock.
Wow.
It's just
the referee would have actually had to play that 70 seconds out with Joe Hart playing keepy-ups in the corner. And he blew the whistle. He actually blew the whistle. I think it was Mike Dean. I think he realised that this is going to look a bit sad here, so I may as well just blow the whistle, because QPR weren't going to press it, and there was no way on earth that Joe was going to kick it. You know?
But on that day, at that moment, with that chance, would you have wanted anybody but Aguero?
No. Do you know what? You play the game and things like that. And I think if you look back at that goal and to explain it, it's the second touch he takes.
Correct. Absolutely.
In a totally and utterly pressured situation that is just inbred in somebody of his caliber. Mm. Because it's the second touch that just enables him to score the goal. If he snatches at it after the first touch, it might get blocked. And the guy slides in and he just takes one more touch at that point in that game. And the quality of it comes subconsciously. He doesn't think about that. It's just a mark of the quality of the player, you know?
Unbelievable.
There's no time to think, Platy, is there, for Aguero?
What I'm saying is that second, anybody, a non-goal scorer would snatch at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And it could get blocked because of that. But that extra touch he takes just opens up the space for him and things, you know?
A little bit like one dropping over your shoulder in an England jersey.
I think you'll find there's not one of them, there's about 150 of them somewhere.
Shut that dog up, for goodness sake. By the way, should he stay in England, or would you expect to see him leave?
I don't know, because I've been away from it for 8 years. I think he's always had this hankering to go back to Argentina, to Boca or somewhere like that. And it's not going to be a financial decision, let's be perfectly honest with that. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if what Sergio's got lined up is a return to Argentina. I think he'll stay in England. I don't think it's on his radar. I think that what will be on his radar, if it's Real Madrid or Barcelona, I think it's a big pull.
United?
I don't think so. I think PSG possibly would be a big pull for him. A Bayern Munich would be a big pull for him. You know, these top clubs. I think Aguero's got to go top club.
Yeah, as I said, that,
and that would be in his ilk.
Mm.
Or what he goes back to Argentina.
What about Chelsea, Platy?
Possibly, but I don't see it. I don't know, because as I say, I've been out of it for a while. But I just don't see it. I see more. I see more the stellar teams, the glamour teams, the Real Madrid's, Barcelona's, the Bayern Munich's, the Champions League winning teams, or I see a return to Argentina. You know, there's one thing about saying I'm going to go back to my home country and play for Boca and everything. Well, if you're going to do it when you're going to have a real effect. And he's still going to have an effect at this age. You know what I mean? Do it at 35 when you're just playing it out and it's just a homecoming.
Mm.
Yeah. If you're going to do it, go and do it properly. You know what I mean? And I don't know, but I just suspect that knowing him from 8-9 years ago, but I haven't seen him for that length of time.
It's always a gamble, Andy, when a player's been abroad and you invest and you keep your fingers crossed that maybe there's enough left in the tank. Mm. I remember Arsenal have done it once or twice with players down the years and it hasn't worked out.
Failed miserably, Richard, actually, a couple of times. High profile players that went came back with big reputations, but the tank was empty, though, Richard.
If you want, guys, if you want, I can send you a picture of that Premier League medal and the FA Cup double. It's up to you. You can have your jokes if you want. Have your jokes, no problem. In fact, I'll just have a sip of my red wine. We'll close the phone call. I'll just go and have a look at those two trophies on my mantle.
I can't tell you how much we miss you. Thank you for talking to us. I hope we haven't caused you too much trouble with others that have made same request.
The last one about Aguero, me and Aguero shared an attribute.
Go on.
I had the same attribute as a player. Aguero's real, real skill was his deceleration. He could decelerate immediately. And I had that skill as well. The difference was I could decelerate very quickly because I wasn't moving very quick.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
He was going... Oh, no, I'm serious here now. If you look at him, it was his biggest attribute.
Yes. Stop and then go again,
it was
perhaps?
His biggest attribute. Yeah, exactly. Yes, he had this unbelievable explosive pace and explosion. But he could slam the brakes on immediately at that. And defenders couldn't get anywhere because by the time they were slamming the brakes on, they were doing an extra couple of yards and he was going again in a different direction, you know? There's a goal he scores at Old Trafford and we get beat, I think. I think it's the year that after we won the league. And I think, we beat them 2-1, but we'd lost the league. And he scores a goal and it's Rio that's defending against him. And he just stops and starts and stops and starts about three times with Rio. And he makes a yard up on him in a short space and bangs it in the top corner, you know.
Mind you, Bella's mugged Rio off and he had a dodgy knee. I say again, Platy, you've been quiet too long. It's been an absolute pleasure for us to listen. Thank you very much.
Well, it's not only that. I can't be quiet now. For the next 20 calls I get, I can't be quiet, can I? Because I've just done this.
Platy, forget doing anything in the UK. As soon as we can, we should get you back over to see you at BN Sports here in Qatar. I tell you, we miss you.
We miss you big time.
Okay, bud. It's the one place I'd come.
Thank
it's
you, Platy.
The one place I'd come with you, boys.
We'll see you in the summer. See you in the summer.
Speak soon.
Thanks.
See you, buddy. Bye. Bye.
Cheers, Andy. Take care. Bye. Bye.
Brilliant, Andy. We've all seen it. I always say to yourself, goals you've scored, you know, we see them from our perspective. Only you know about that moment that you were in. And it's fascinating listening to Platy about that touchline 4 minutes, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing that. I mean, you forget. I mean, I remember the goal, obviously. It's an iconic goal. You'll never forget, even though you're not a Manchester City fan. But the one thing you do forget is that with 4 minutes to go, they were 2-1 down and losing the league.
Yes.
It was quite an extraordinary turnaround of events in that match. The contribution of Jekyll when he came on as a substitute. And then, as Platy says, he would not have... You see, I think if Edin Dzeko's on the back end of that second chance, that Guerra one, he doesn't score. There you go. And that's no disrespect to Dzeko, who's a top player. But I don't think he scores.
Why?
And that's the difference, I think.
You see, these podcasts, Andy, are supposed to be 40 minutes long. We've strayed again. I like to think it's been worthwhile. But go on, explain why.
Yeah, because what I'm saying is I think Dzeko was not as natural and as gifted as Aguero. What Platy talked about, that second touch, right? I think maybe Dzeko, and maybe I'm doing him a disservice, but just having watched him play, I think Dzeko would not have had the dexterity and the speed to take that second touch and hit it as quickly as Aguero did. Mm. Platy talked about his ability to stop almost instantly. Well, Dzeko was he wasn't a mover like Aguero. He didn't move as well as Aguero. He wasn't as quick as Aguero because he was much taller. And I think he might have got one touch, but then he would be hitting it. And I think the chance might have gone, as Platy was talking about. And that's why I think
in certain situations, you need somebody there. And at that time, in their history, Manchester City's, they needed Sergio Aguero at that moment in time, and he was the perfect player at the perfect time.
Well, it's been a brilliant listen again. I always know it's gone well when I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Listen, fly well. I won't expect to see you next week because you'll be locked down, but I know that you'll be closer than you are this time around. So
that's true.
On we go.
I'll actually only be about half a mile away.
You will.
From you.
Those of you who think that we're right and there should be a statue to the survivors, please get in touch. Let's get a bandwagon rolling. You can get in touch at Keys and Grey Pod, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And Andy and I look forward to spending time with you again next week.
Agreed.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.